Hey, everybody. You're about to listen to an interview with the world's leading expert on octopuses, Warren Carlisle. Normally, when I do my show, I intro someone as I'm talking to them because I think it helps hype them up a little bit. So normally I would have been like, Warren Carlisle, world's leading expert on octopuses, welcome to my show. And it would have been really fun and he would have been happy. And I did not get the opportunity to do that here because as soon as I walked into his apartment, I was hit over the head with octopuses. Okay, like kind of figuratively, but not really. There were octopus paintings, octopus towels. His couch had octopus stuffed animals on it. Not one, not two, not 10, like maybe 100. Also, he was like, hey, Paige, how's it going? Do you want any water? Hey, by the way, this is an octopus book. It was on his counter. And he was like, look at all this octopus trivia. And that's where the episode begins. I just pulled out my microphone and I started recording him talking about octopuses. Oh my gosh, this guy is the real deal.
This was the page here that actually got me fascinated with the octopuses because she details in the beginning how octopuses have always throughout history been just misrepresented, misconstrued, painted out to be a monster. And after reading this, I was like, oh my gosh, this is essentially me as a kid being misunderstood, words being put in my mouth. And I was just like, somebody has to stand up for the animal. And so, yeah, later on, that's when I decided to create Octonation. I felt like, okay, it's time.
Was it the whole page or a specific paragraph?
It talks about here, it says, you know, not everyone liked the octopus. There was an explorer that found the touch of the octopus repulsive. A struggle before I can make my hands do their duty and seize a tentacle, he confessed. Unmitigated horror leading to certain doom. So these were the certain things that were published about this animal and followed it all throughout history. And even Aristotle said that the octopus was a stupid creature, for it would approach a human hand if reached. And I was like, that's curiosity. That's not stupidity. And so there's just all these things throughout history where I was just like, man, this octopus has never had a break. And so I was like, okay, maybe it's my job to kind of reintroduce them into the world as remarkable creatures that existed in every ocean, along every coastline. And depending on where they lived, and you'll find out later, they have a unique superpower that allows them to be masters of whatever environment they're in. And there's over 300 species, and there's probably more. But I just thought somebody needs to tell their story. And I decided to be the guy that did it. My whole thing was, I was a kid, I would make flashcards with different species of dogs, with birds, with everything. And I remember when I first encountered an octopus, I went to the library to go make flashcards about the octopus and there were no books. And so I just remember as a kid, there was an open loop in my head. I was like, why doesn't this animal have any books about it? And I just thought, is it because they're aliens? Is it because nobody knows anything about them? And I had that question unanswered because I couldn't find the information. And if anybody knows anything about being autistic, when you have an open loop, you will go crazy about it. And so I just remember being like, Mom, we need to go to the biggest library in town. We need to figure out about this animal. And she was just like, calm down. And I was like, but there's no books at my library. And I just remember being a troubled 7-year-old wanting to figure out the answer to this question.
That's so cute. That is adorable. Listeners, Warren is adorable. He has these big green eyes and he is so excited every time he talks about octopuses. I want to call them octopi. I do. Octopi. It's much nicer. It's much more appropriate.
That's why, I mean, the widespread misusage of the word, because I think it is not as weird as octopuses. Every single time somebody says it, you kind of just know their level of octopus fandom if they don't at least know. You know what I mean? They have to at least know. You know kind of like your level of how obsessed you are with octopus if you know all of these common misconceptions or mispronunciations or even the octopus's arm. So octopuses don't have tentacles. What you'll find is that people call them tentacles, but octopuses have 8 arms with suckers, 2 rows of suckers that line the whole entire length of the arm. Tentacles are what squids have. So they have 8 arms and they have these 2 limbs called tentacles that have no suckers throughout the length of the limb. And then at the end, there's this lily pad almost like lined with all these suckers and they keep them in sockets behind their eyes. And when they want to attack their prey, their tentacles blast out. They grab their prey and they bring them into the beak. But octopuses, they don't have those tentacles. Those are something that squids have, that cuttlefish have.
Do you eat squid?
No, I don't eat any cephalopods. Cephalopods are octopus, squid, nautilus, vampire squid. I know I'm missing one of them. I don't eat the whole entire family. And it's just because of how much I've learned about them. It's just something I don't do.
You know, I'll say octopuses for you. Okay. I would not eat them for the longest time because of how intelligent they are. Went to Mexico City with one of my friends for my 28th birthday. Neither of us spoke Spanish, so we're like, okay, well, we will treat the city with respect and only order at restaurants in Spanish. And one time we accidentally ordered octopus and it was so good. I just couldn't go back. I'm sorry. I like feel really guilty. Yeah. What do you think about that?
So the thing with Octonation, you know, we're the largest octopus fan club in the world. And what I wanted to make very clear when I first started it was we're not an animal rights organization, right? We're not an organization that's going to judge people for the decisions they make. We're purely going to be like an educational nonprofit that inspires wonder of the ocean by educating the world about octopuses. Now, after you find out all there is to know about octopuses and you still decide to eat them, again, it's one of those things where it's like, we're not going to be like, oh, you must not be a real octopus fan. I understand there are countries like Japan, they live off of the ocean. Hawaii, they view the octopus in a very different way than people who are more inland. And so just throughout history, there's a cultural thing around octopus and food. And honestly, you know, they're in no threat of extinction pretty much whatsoever. They've been on this planet for hundreds of millions of years. And so I feel like that's a decision that you just have to make for yourself. And I really want to be the organization that just inspires wonder of the ocean so that people just realize that there's life that's existed on this planet far longer than we have. And you should be inspired by that resiliency.
Calling it now, I don't think I'm going to be able to eat octopus once we are done. Would you consider yourself a modern day Aquaman or Captain Planet? Captain Planet, right? It was the cute, you think, little like back then. We were probably born around the same time. Mm-hmm. All right. Would you consider yourself a modern day Aquaman? Crusader for the octopus? Captain Octopus saving. Okay, I'm going to stop. What do you think?
I would view myself as the hype man for the octopus. I have called myself the PR agent for the octopus. Like if anybody wants to talk about them. The cool thing about Octonation is that we have connections to people that do tattoos of octopuses. We have the largest network of underwater photographers, of artists that do sculptures, acrylics, all these certain things. And so I'm really much like a facilitator, curator.
Very interesting. Do you have an octopus best friend?
I do. I actually remember one of the first times I ever met an octopus in person was at Moody Gardens in Galveston. And there was a giant Pacific octopus named Lola. And it was kind of like whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. And she was just climbing up and throwing her arms over the edge of her exhibit and was just so curious and came across as just really affectionate. Like she really liked it when you pet her. I can't say that she really liked it, but it just seemed like she was very stimulated by just petting on her mantle right in between her eyes and very much like a squishy puppy dog. And I remember after that moment, I was just like, wow, like these creatures are so misunderstood. They're so, well, depending on their personality, because they all have individual personalities. But yeah, so that was probably one of my first moments where I was just like, yeah, this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life.
Warren, this is the moment I decided that I'm not ever eating an octopus again. It's so cute. What mammal would you say the octopus is the closest to? Like if you're going to say personality wise, close to a land mammal. So that way when people think about eating it, they'll think about eating that animal.
Very much like a squishy puppy dog. If you visit an octopus every single day, maybe at an aquarium, you can start to pick up on just by its eye contact. It's weirdly familiar where you're looking at it and you're like, oh, I feel like I know what's going on in there. Once you learn an octopus's personality, there's something going on. And anybody that has locked eyes with an octopus can tell it's considering you just as much as you're considering it. It's curious about you. And depending on its life experiences, it might be a little bit more shy. Or it might be a little bit more bold. So it just depends. Like I said, octopuses have different personalities and they learn through observation. So depending on their life, they have this unique personality. Those who are listening right now that have had that kind of eye contact with one go, oh, I know exactly what he's talking about.
Make eye contact with you?
Yeah, they have these big rectangular pupils. And what's really unique about them is that they sit atop their head and they actually have nearly 360 degree vision. So because everything in the ocean wants to eat them, they're in every single food web on our planet. They're like a squishy floating protein bar for almost everything in the ocean. Over time, they've evolved to have nearly 360 degree vision so they can protect themselves against things that are directly behind them. I don't know if you've ever seen a goat, their pupils. They're highly preyed upon animals as well on land. And so they just evolved over time to have more range of vision. And an octopus represents an animal that has nearly every single range of vision in the ocean as a result of them being highly preyed upon.
So just as a note for my listeners, this is literally the first 5 or 6 minutes Warren and I are talking. You were just bouncing off with the octopus trivia, like popcorn. This is incredible. I feel like I could ask you anything about octopus and you would know the answer.
I feel like I would know the answer, or I would know somebody who knows the answer. And I think that's part of the expertise, is being able to defer to somebody whose specialty is something else. Like, as far as somebody who knows intimately the relationship between an aquarius or an octopus, like in captivity, Megan Holst has studied senescence in octopuses, Aquarium of the Bay. And so there's just all these different people who have all these unique interests that I've been fortunate to build a relationship with. And so that's the cool thing about Octonation too. It's almost like the mind of an octopus, where an octopus has a central brain, and then in each of their arms, they have 2/3 of their neurons located throughout their body. And so they can actually make decisions, like their arms can make decisions without the use of their brain. It's called like a decentralized nervous system. And so I feel like Octonation's network is very much like an octopus, from the standpoint of, yes, I'm at the helm, or, you know, at maybe the central brain, but all throughout all of our arms, we have, you know, underwater photographers, we have artists, we have people that collect them, we have just such a wide array of people. And I find that people that are drawn to the octopus naturally, and maybe I'm biased because I run the largest octopus fan club, are just curious individuals. They don't have so much of an ego because they're able to consider something else other than themselves for a moment. They're just these very unique people that understand that the octopus is special.
I love this. Okay, so we touched a bit on your journey into becoming the world's leading octopus expert. I have to ask, what got you so interested in it? Can you just start from the beginning? So you were 7, you saw that there were nooks on the octopus. You were like, hey, I'm kind of like this creature. Why don't more people love the octopus?
I don't think I've really said this on a podcast, but I was in special ed from kindergarten to the 3rd grade. I had a speech impediment, and it's, you know, later on I realized it's because I wanted to get out 3 or 4 thoughts at the same time. And so I couldn't get out anything. So I would just stutter and stutter. And I had to learn how to kind of like slow down. And I learned how to do that. When I learned how to do that, then all of a sudden I was like reading at a 7th grade level, doing high school things and high school assignments, accelerated learning. But going back to the octopus is just, to me, it's just this endlessly fascinating creature. Those of you who are out there who have ADHD understand obsessions. If you start learning about the octopus is one of the only animals that is just endlessly fascinating, from the standpoint of you can go down a rabbit hole of obsession, and there's hundreds of millions of years of things to learn about when it comes to the octopus and evolution and different species and all their different behaviors, and then just different pockets of people in the world who have their own fascinations. There's just so much to learn about that it's the one thing in my life that I've latched onto that has never once. Like every single day, I'm always learning something new. I'm always being introduced to someone new that revives my love for this all over again.
So many questions. Just wanted to ask, what's your favorite fact about the octopus?
So my favorite fact about the octopus has to be about vision. I've always been like an eye person, from the standpoint of it holding a lot of emotion and a lot of power. And so I just feel like that the way that that eye evolved, that ancient intelligence, that all-seeing, all-knowing, being on this planet for, like I said, hundreds of millions of years before the dinosaurs have survived multiple mass extinction events on this planet. When I look into the octopus's eyes, I see the original life on Earth, and it just represents something that's so powerful to me.
So wait a minute. Wait, octopuses are older than dinosaurs. What?
Yeah, so octopuses have been on this planet since before dinosaurs, before trees. I've always said that octopuses are the planet's OGs. Like when people talk about, oh, an octopus is alien, I go, no, they're actually super terrestrial as opposed to extraterrestrial, right? They have been on the planet since before dinosaurs, before trees, and they've just seen it all and survived, like I said, mass extinctive events that have wiped out a lot of life on Earth. They managed to just chill in the ocean.
They've got gangs?
They have gangs. So most octopuses actually are solitary creatures, which is another reason I relate to them. I've always felt myself being a little isolated or going off on my own and wanting to learn information for myself. That's representative of the octopus. They're all for themselves.
Maybe instead of octopuses or octopi or the octopus, I can just say OG mobsters. Oh my God. All right. So that's how you got interested in the octopus. How did you become an expert? And would you call yourself the world's leading expert on octopuses? Octopuses. God, my podcast is PG. I like to censor myself. All right.
As far as expert, I went through a lot of imposter syndrome with this because I remember when I was doing a lot of self-study and I would be on Google Scholar and I would be on all these different things and I would try to reach out to people and ask them questions. And it became very clear that there were like people who were academics and then there was me who was very passionate but didn't have any sort of degree in this. And so for the longest time, I remember up until I met Sai, I judged my level of expertise based on education as it related to professional schooling and things like that. And then when I met Sai and her book, The Soul of an Octopus, became the top-selling book about the octopus. And she calls herself a naturalist and writes books about animals. I always tell people that Sai has the ability, she has this magical ability to make people fall in love with an animal that they haven't even considered. And all of a sudden it becomes their favorite animal. It's just, if you've ever read Soul of an Octopus, it's just one of those books that afterwards you're like, wow, I never would have considered that. And so after a meeting with her, I remember she goes, go forth and conquer like Octo King. And when she called me that, I thought, oh, I have permission now from Sai Montgomery to go out there and to really shake things up, to really do my own thing and to connect people. I've written thousands of posts about the octopuses, about different species all over the world. And my words have been read by hundreds of millions of people. Our content was seen by 500 million people this past year. And I've consulted with a lot of the experts in the space. And so with that, I would say that there's a level of expertise in that.
I would agree. Do you call yourself Octo King? Does your husband call you Octo King? My podcast is for children. All right. Just for my listeners, can you describe an octopus to me as if I were blind?
So I'll describe it to you how I describe it to kids. So imagine that your head is a balloon, right? And imagine we took all of your organs and we just threw them in your head, right? And the balloon expanded. Now imagine that we take your arms, control paste, and have 8 arms. So essentially, an octopus is this creature that has all of its bodily organs in what looks like its head, but that's its body. And then it has 8 arms attached to that. And they're very squishy, but the body is made out of all these different types of muscles, right? It's called a hydrostatic skeleton. So they have a body where instead of having bones, they have all these chambers of water that can harden and really take shape. And they have the ability to, like I said, move their whole entire body through something that would be the size of a quarter. Whatever their beak can really get through, their whole body can move through. And like I said, these really squishy creatures also have these big, magnificent eyes, and they learn through observation just like you and I. What else would you like to know?
What about the life of an octopus? How do they live? Where do they live? What do they eat?
So an octopus, they live in every single ocean in the world. They're along every single coastline in the world. They only live in salt water. And depending on where they live in the ocean, they have evolved this really unique set of skills that allow them to be the master of that environment. And so there's a species of octopus called the blanket octopus, and she lives in the open water. She never touches the ocean floor. She spends her whole entire life floating through the open ocean. And when it's time for her to lay eggs, she sprouts these biological stalks out of her body, like Jack and the Beanstalk. And then she attaches her eggs to the stalk, and she continues to swim throughout the open ocean until she hatches those eggs. And then those eggs stay in the open ocean and live their life out through the open ocean. So like I said, when you say octopuses, what you really have to know, it's like, well, what dog breed? You know, you really have to think about what species of octopus are you talking about? Because like I said, there's an octopus that lives in Antarctica. It has antifreeze proteins in its skin that allows it to survive through sub-zero temperatures. So you can just go on and on about the different species and where they live and how they live their lives. And so that's why I said, if you go even to our website and look at Octopedia, which is this comprehensive field guide of octopus species, they're all different. They all live different lives.
Warren is giggling. What is funny?
Because you seem so like you'd never heard any of this information before. And that's actually the goal of mine with every single post is to teach something that completely blows someone's mind to the point where they go, this is the first time I've ever heard this, or I cannot wait to research this on my own, or wow, I've never heard somebody so passionate about this, or I've never heard something described in a way that I completely understand it. These are all things that I go for, and I can see in you that you're feeling all that right now.
When you were describing the octopus birthing process to me, that's so insane that you have an octopus and it just, pops them out like popcorn on stalks, and then they grow from the stalks. I don't think I've ever heard of an animal reproducing in that way. I feel like I should ask now about the octopus's reproductive cycle, but I kind of don't want to. But I will, because I feel like people would want to know about it. Tell me, how do octopuses reproduce? Do they have a mating ritual? Do they have partners? My God, are octopuses polyamorous? What goes on in the sex lives of the octopus? Cannot believe I just said that. That was not anywhere on my question list, but now it is.
So the octopus's mating process is really interesting from the standpoint of, depending again on the different species that you're talking about, there's different mating processes. The larger Pacific striped octopus actually mates beak to beak. There is the Argonaut octopus, which is the female paper nautilus. She is able to secrete calcite out of her arms and essentially form an egg casing around her whole entire body that she will later serve as like a elegant stroller for her children when she goes to lay them. The really interesting thing in this process is the males. You've heard me talk a lot about the female octopuses here because they have a really interesting life cycle from the standpoint of they stick around, it seems like, a little bit longer than the males. The males exist for one purpose and one purpose only, to develop their hectocotyledons, to develop the spermatophores. So what's really interesting about the males is in most octopus, the third arm from the right, if you look at the very tip of the arm and you're trying to sex an octopus to be like, is it a female or a male? If you look at that third arm from the right, at the very end of the arm, you'll notice that the suckers stop and then there's this spoon-like appendage called the hectocotylus. And that's how you can tell if it's a male or not. Now, when it's time for him to mate, he'll go and he'll find a female, and then he'll essentially stick that spoon-like appendage into her mantle. So on the sides of a female octopus is the mantle cavity. And it's where they bring water in and flush it throughout their gills so that they can get the oxygen from it. And then they exhale it out of a siphon out of the side of their body too. And so the male will essentially go in and he'll put the hectocotylus and he'll deposit that sperm packet, and then he'll swim off. As soon as he swims off, something happens in his body. It's almost like cellular suicide. It's called senescence. And so he'll immediately start going through this dementia or Alzheimer's-like state where he'll forget how to change colors. He'll swim into the water column and it'll fish will eat him. Whereas before, he knew, I can't swim into the water column. There's predators all in there. But there's something that happens after a male mates that just goes, my purpose for living is over. There's nothing more I need to do. I've already done what I needed to do. And the body immediately begins breaking down and it becomes food. The female, she sticks around. And then when she decides that she wants to lay eggs, she can actually have potentially many mates. She can have multiple hectocotyledons in her mantle. And there's actually some research to suggest that she can choose, I don't know how she chooses or how she knows, which one is more fit to lay eggs with. And so she will start secreting eggs, depending on the species, like the giant Pacific octopus. She'll start braiding them and she'll lay these strands of eggs called festoons and she'll attach them to the roof of her den. And then she attaches over, 500,000 of those eggs. And then over time, she'll oxygenate them. She'll make sure that they're clean of bacteria. She'll swirl her arms around them and make sure that they're clean and nothing is getting them. And then she doesn't eat anymore. She starves, essentially. As the octopuses are hatching, she's using her siphon and blowing them out into the water column. And then afterwards, she exhales for the last time almost, and then she dies right then and there once her babies have hatched. And that's the most common, I would say, life cycle of the octopus is that.
It reminds me of the book Charlotte's Web.
Yeah, that was a really sad book. I remember that book.
So the octopus basically finds a mate, gets pregnant by the mate, the man dies, and then once the octopus gives birth, she dies.
Definitely. Yeah. And what's really interesting after the fact is that the octopuses, they stay in this, what's it called? Like this planktonic stage where they're eating small little baby crabs in the water column. And what's really interesting, you know, when you like, if you ever would run away from home as a kid, what they have is like, you get a stick and you tie something on the end of the stick and you put all your clothes in it and you run away old school style. Well, an octopus is born with their yolk sac. So I imagine like a kid running away from home and they have this yolk sac that it uses to have a snack. So it doesn't have to immediately start hunting. It can suck down this delicious protein smoothie. And then once that yolk sac is gone and it's eaten all of that, Then it has to start immediately going into a hunting phase where it starts hunting these little larval crabs or larval shrimp in the stage, and then it'll settle back down on the ocean floor if it doesn't get eaten in that planktonic stage. But one of the most interesting facts about the octopus is, yes, they lay over 500,000 or so eggs, depending on species, but I think it's like less than 1% survive into adulthood. It's just a really interesting stat. And so it just goes to show you how many of them there are in our oceans, that there are just so many, and only 1% of broods survive.
What's the typical lifespan of an octopus?
So the typical lifespan of an octopus, depending on the species, again, there are warm water species that live 12 to 18 months, maybe even shorter. And then the giant Pacific octopus, and what we've seen is like cold water species, for whatever reason, seem to live a little bit longer. You know, there's a species of octopus called the Musa octopus that they discovered that broods over her eggs for 4 years straight, and they never once saw her eating. Imagine not eating for 4 years. That's a very long, long cycle. And so, like I said, you can't say all octopuses because it's very species dependent.
So how many types of octopuses are there? And can you tell me about some of the types?
The number that is published online everywhere is there's over 300 species of octopuses. I feel like there are thousands. There's so much that we have yet to uncover in our oceans. But the ones that we know about are species like the blanket octopus that has this 6-foot iridescent cape floating through the ocean, where you say that she's like the Beyonce of octopus. She's like a glamazon. Then you have the paper nautilus, which is another female octopus that can secrete calcite out of her arms and grow an egg casing. There are species like the sand octopus that doesn't have the ability to change color all that much. And so it evolved to shoot itself a foot underground, secrete a mucus to reinforce the sandy walls around it, and then create a ventilation shaft with its arms, almost like this chimney, and live underground by being able to burrow. So depending on, like I said, the environment of the octopus, there's just a species of octopus that lives there in the ocean, and it's figured out how to thrive in its environment. There's another one that I love called the Caribbean reef octopus, and it lives next to very vibrant coral, and it just has this remarkable ability. What they do is they have these parachute-like arms, and so they'll throw their arms over the complete head of a coral. It's almost like a parachute. I don't know if you remember in grade school. Remember that rainbow parachute thing that people would go up and come down? Well, she throws her arms over the whole entire coral head and then traps prey. And she'll blow jets of water to kind of spook the prey out. And then she'll use that to scare fish out or scare a crab out or whatever, and then consume the crab. So like I said, there's just so many different stories. I feel like I could talk all day about just how many different species there are and what a day in their life looks like.
Well, and I could talk all day about it too. Why don't you pick your favorite octopus and tell me about the day in its life or his life or her life. I don't know if octopus like gender neutral pronouns or not. I feel like calling an octopus an it in front of you is probably not a good idea. We'll call a dog an it. Tell me about the gender situation with octopuses. I did it right. Naturally, I didn't say octopi.
Yeah, so as far as the genders of octopuses, it's really interesting because there is research that came out of New Zealand, Australia. There's a species of octopus called Octopus tetricus, or the gloomy octopus. And they're actually one of the only species that we know about that lives very communally. That isn't to say that they get along with each other. It's probably like the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills situation where they have spats with each other and they're very territorial. But they saw that the female gloomy octopus learned how to throw shells at other men who were trying to mate with her. They would throw shells in a very unique way. She would position her siphon in front of shells, and then she would blast with all of her might shells and just completely throw shells, and it would hit the male. She would blast jets of water and create a cloud of sediment and just completely knock a guy out and just be like, hey, get away from me. And so I think that went very viral because that's a very relatable thing. It's like, hey, no means no. I'll throw shells at you. I'll throw silt at you. If you're curious, you can actually see that on our blog. The blog is called Watch Out, This Octopus is Throwing Things on Octonation's blog. All octopuses are pretty solitary. And like I said, it's the story about men over and over again that they exist for really one thing. There are species of octopuses that have something called sexual dimorphism. So I told you about the blanket octopus, that she has this 6-foot iridescent cape. She is this gorgeous species that's floating through the open ocean. And when you think about the males actually only grow the size of an acorn. It's a very interesting first and last date for the men because, like I said, they imagine like this octopus right here, it only grows the size of her pupil. And so it just represents this weird relationship that they have, where his sole purpose is to develop, like I said, that mating arm. And it's funny because you can tell when a male blanket octopus is ready to mate because he looks like a popcorn that is ready to just pop. It's almost translucent where you can see the spermatophore. And he tries to find, like I said, this glamazon, this beautiful blanket octopus, and he tries to deposit his sperm packet. Another interesting thing about him is that he'll ride atop the bells of jellyfish and he'll use the stinging tentacles of the jellyfish as protection. So it's almost like this really funny story where imagine this male octopus atop the bell of a jellyfish, almost like this humble steed, you know, and he's floating towards this blanket octopus of a Mission Impossible where he's trying to deliver this mating arm. And that's the relationship. And then after he does that, he enters senescence and gets eaten.
God.
Yes.
Pick your favorite octopus and take me through a day in its life.
And a day in the life of my favorite. I really love underrepresented underdog or under octo stories. One of my favorite species is the hairy octopus. It only grows really much the size of your fingernail. And the reason I like that one is because I have a hairy chest, so I've always identified with hairy octopus. Because it looks like a little pom-pom ball. Papillae grow off of its body, and it looks like a hair model underwater, like Fabio or something, with skin, kind of skin flaps blowing in the wind. You can't even tell it's an octopus because of how much hair that it sprouts out of its body. And what's really interesting about this species is that it actually uses the currents almost like rideshare, like the ocean's rideshare. It waits until currents come along to blow it to another area, and it just hops up into the currents, and it uses the currents to like kind of like travel. And I'm like, that is so like me, like just being like, okay, I don't really want to move. I'm just going to wait till a current comes by and just throw my body into it and then wait until it takes me to a new place. But its job is to essentially not look like an octopus. It really looks like floating seaweed. It's probably one of the most rare octopuses to ever uncover. But some of my friends have sent me pictures. This cool thing about being the founder of the largest octopus fan club is I get sent hundreds of photos a week of different discoveries, different behaviors, different things. And so my friend Brandon Ryan Hannon just sent me photos of octopuses that he discovered, hairy octopuses that he discovered in Japan, and they weren't ever seen there before. So a lot of our members are making discoveries that no scientist has ever seen as a result of us just having this expansive network of people.
That's so cool. You're an octopus crusader. Oh my gosh. Tell me, what would you call yourself?
It's so funny. I change my answer every single time somebody asks me this question. My favorite one is I'm just a mouthpiece for the eventual takeover of our cephalopod overlords. So they're utilizing me as a way to warn people that they've got things figured out. And it's only a matter of time before they decide to take over. That's obviously a little scary one. I don't tell kids that, but adults, I'm just a mouthpiece. I'm just here to make sure that this animal is perceived as one of the most iconic creatures in the ocean, because for so long they weren't thought about. They were just viewed as a snack. They were seen as malicious, as monsters. And now I think people are coming around. You start seeing documentaries come up, and there's one coming out on April 21st, Secrets of the Octopus, of which I'm a co-author of the companion book that's coming out. Now that I have such a big network, I can really market it and get people excited about it. And so just again, making people realize that one of the ocean's OGs is deserving of all of this love and respect. And that's just what I'm doing.
So are these creatures, are they aliens? Do you really believe they're going to take over the world?
I've never thought they were aliens. I remember one of the reasons I first got into them was because I was obsessed with aliens. I had an alien bedspread. I remember if I would get good grades, I would ask my mom to buy me like alien posters and things like that. So I definitely have an affinity for extraterrestrial life, I definitely believe. But as far as octopuses are concerned, the more and more I've learned about them throughout the years, it just led me to believe they're not extraterrestrial, they're super terrestrial. They're super from the Earth. They've been here forever. We humans are the ones that are like a blip on the radar of life here on this planet. They've seen a whole lot more, although they can't express it. We can see it through how smart they are from an evolutionary standpoint. And I know from a marketing perspective, people love it. And so I play into it a lot too, just because there are some blackwater photography that makes them look like they're aliens. But at the end of the day, like I said, I always tell people that they're the ocean's OGs. They've just been here forever.
How do you feel when you see them in the aquarium or kept captive?
So I remember my first interaction with an octopus was actually at an aquarium. And so that eye-to-eye contact with one is actually what sparked my first love of them. I don't think I would have ever had access or been able to see. I mean, I'm the middle of seven children in my family. I don't think that I would have ever been where I am today had I not seen it face-to-face. I would have just thought, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so it's hard to make a judgment about it. And so I do believe, and Octonation has this stance today, that we're pro-accredited aquariums, that aquarists are on the front line of ocean conservation on a daily basis. Oftentimes, it's a thankless job, and they're inspiring wonder of our oceans. And obviously, if they're not being taken care of, if they're put in environments that aren't thoughtful, I obviously don't want that to happen. I think something happened in Hawaii where octopuses were put in these big white tubs, and it was kind of like an octopus petting zoo situation. And I always remember thinking, that's probably not going to last long, because it just seemed very disrespectful to have an animal like that in the open and people paying to pet it. I was like, I don't think that's going to last long. And it recently shut down. So again, I'm pro-accredited aquarium. There are aquariums like New England Aquarium that hired people to come in to dive, to look at the natural environment of the octopus. And then when they look at their exhibit and they're planning their exhibit out, they're building structures that are very similar to their natural environment. And something to know about the octopus is that they're den animals. They spend the majority of their life in their den because they are a floating protein bar. They're not out majestically gallivanting in our open oceans. They are going out, they're hunting, they're coming back to their den, and they're staying there until they need to eat again. And so if you see an octopus in captivity and it's in the corner and you're thinking, oh, I wish it had this big expansive ocean to swim in, know that it would probably just be chilling in a den in the ocean the same way, except the difference at an aquarium is they have an endless seafood buffet of restaurant quality seafood. They don't have 360 degrees of predators that are biting their arms off. They're pretty well taken care of, and they serve as a really great ambassador and reminder of just who the animal is. So they have pretty great lives. And in The Soul of an Octopus, Cy Montgomery talks about the lengths at which aquariums like New England Aquarium or Aquarium of the Pacific or Monterey Bay Aquarium go to make sure that their octopuses are treated like superstars.
How could I keep an octopus as a pet?
So octopuses are really difficult to keep as pets. We get asked this question a lot. There's actually a very popular YouTuber, TikToker, Instagrammer called The Reef Doc. And he will rescue octopuses from restaurants and sushi bars or, you know, whatever. And he'll bring them home and record videos about them to educate about them at scale. And it's a very hard job because you have to think an octopus, warm water species, like we mentioned, they only live 12 to 18 months. And so when you get them, they're most likely 6, 7, 8 months old. And so you don't have that long with them if you're having them in captivity. They're very hard, like I said, to take care of. They need constant enrichment. They can get out of the exhibit. You have to make sure that it's like almost airtight, sealed in there. And so the reason that it's not a popular animal to keep is one, their lifespan. Two, they require a lot of care and attention. They're not a goldfish. They're really, really smart.
I've heard about them breaking out of aquariums.
Yeah, so there's all these different stories where if you turn around and you're cleaning the exhibit and you're leaving off of the top of the exhibit, you look over there and the octopus is there, and then you start cleaning again, and then all of a sudden they're out. They're out of the exhibit. They are halfway down the hallway, or you can't find them. I've heard so many different stories about that. And then there was a really popular one that the octopus actually got out of the aquarium when they were cleaning it, went down one of the pipes that they had that fed directly out into the ocean. There's a book called Inky's Great Escape that's based off of a true story where there's a will, there's a way. And the cool thing about octopuses, especially giant Pacific ones, is that they can recognize individual human faces. So it doesn't matter if you're, you know, working in an aquarium and you're in the same uniform, an octopus can look up and say, oh, that's so-and-so. And they have chemoreceptors in their suckers that allow them to taste, to smell, and take a profile of what you taste like and whatever, and be like, oh, this is so-and-so. So if they're not looking at you, they're probably like, oh, this is a familiar taste. So there's all these different ways of identifying a human as an octopus that don't require their eyes.
Who is more intelligent, the human or the octopus? You giggle a lot.
Because I love these questions, because I love talking about this. Yeah. So who's more intelligent? They have it all figured out. And so if you think of that, their intelligence versus our intelligence, it's like they've been doing their things for hundreds of millions of years. They have their lives figured out. And so if you try to compare intelligence between, okay, well, are they forming, you know, octopus fan clubs like humans are on land? You try to anthropomorphize them, but I think they're the smartest in their own right. They're the smartest in their own environments. So I don't really compare the two. I just think when it comes to the human ego, it's really easy to discount every other life form on the planet. We don't need to just think about animals that are on the brink of extinction. Why don't we consider animals that have survived the test of time, are resilient, are in no threat of extinction and have been on this planet for the longest. I think that's a more compelling thing to look into than just caring about an animal that there's only seven of on the planet. And it seems like all of our time and attention is so focused in on animals that don't have much ecological impact, because it's almost like we're sad that we've done this to them. But I don't know, it's just something that I know that I want to talk to a lot more people about, is just considering, let's say, why do we have this focus on these extinct animals and not these keystone species that are keeping the ocean going?
Two major conversation places we could go to right now from what you just told me. Just to backtrack to what you were talking about earlier. So the octopus, if I touch it, it will know who I am and it will remember me for the rest of my life, or its life, his life, her life, the life of... Okay, talk to me about that. So it creates a profile of you. When you go see your octopus friends, do they recognize you? Are they like, oh yeah, this is our friend. This is someone who's here to save and help. What is your relationship to them like? Do they all recognize you when you go and visit your octopus friends? Or are they like, yeah, it's Warren. He's crusading for us on National Geographic and the Disney Channel. We love Warren. What is the personality of the octopus? Are they friendly towards humans? What's their relationship with them like?
So if you've ever been to a shelter and interacted with a dog, typically, if you go to a shelter, you know, some dogs, depending on what their life was like before they got into the shelter, they have different personalities. Some of them are more skittish. Some of them are aggressive. I very much view octopuses that have been captured or rescued and been put into an aquarium to be an ambassador of that aquarium very much in the same lane. You never know what you're going to get. You never know if it's going to be a good ambassador, or you go to an aquarium sometimes and they'll be like, oh, we don't have a good one. Meaning like the octopus isn't gallivanting across its exhibit. It eats and then it doesn't do anything else. It doesn't show its splendor all the time. And then you capture some octopuses that are super curious. They'll walk all over the aquariums. They all have different personalities. And really, I wouldn't say that they have so much of a relationship with me as much as the reason why I go to various aquariums all over the world is because I'm more curious about the relationship they have with people that hang out with them every single day. They have taught me everything that I know about a relationship that you can form with an octopus, because they're the ones who take care of them every single day. Like, they're the ones that come in every single day. A lot of what I know is a result of interviewing people that take care of octopuses all over the world, is that they can recognize them. You know, when they see them, immediately they'll shoot up to the top of the exhibit and just start displaying their suckers and tasting the top of the water. The way that I explain it to kids sometimes, I'm like, imagine if they've ever touched silk, it's almost like touching silk, but under the silk, there's like a steel bar, because they have that hydrostatic skeleton that they can make really hard. And so they can form different shapes and postures. And so my relationship, oftentimes I don't visit an octopus more than once or twice, but I've been fortunate to go to Aquarium of the Pacific a lot. I love, you know, that aquarium and what they're doing there. And there are some octopuses like Gumball that I've seen three or four times. And I definitely feel like it remembers me, because I oftentimes spend sometimes 30 to 45 minutes with them at a time. And I do feel like that individual knew me. But yeah, it's different depending on, like I said, they have different personalities. It would be like anything with people. You know, you can't really speak for one. Sometimes like they come in and they're just always skittish. Sometimes they come in and they're super affectionate. It just depends on, like I said, their life prior to coming into being an ambassador for an aquarium.
You don't have to answer this if you don't want to. People who love wildlife, they're so connected to the animal that they care about. Sometimes the animal, if given the opportunity, eats them. Do you think an octopus would eat you if given the opportunity, even your octopus friend?
I don't. I think an octopus would eat me, mainly because another interesting thing about their biology and their anatomy, I should say, is that they have a donut-shaped brain that wraps around their esophagus. So they can't eat, they have to liquefy everything before they eat it. So how an octopus eats something is that they have a beak like a parrot, except they have like this underbite beak. And they will inject this paralytic compound in their venom, their cephalotoxin, and they have this raspy tongue. It's almost like if you've ever felt a cat tongue. It's like this very raspy tongue. And they use that to bring food down their esophagus. But around that esophagus, they have a brain. So they're actually really smart, and they know what they can eat, what they can't eat, what's worth biting, what's not worth biting. Like I said, they've really figured out what fights to pick and when to pick them. And so there's a behavior that you'll see them do in the wild where it's called like a clinging mechanism. To protect their arms from getting eaten, they'll attach all of their suckers on something and they'll wait until an opportune time to blast off. So like I said, octopuses, even these blue ring ones that we're surrounded by, yes, they have venom that's 1,000 times more lethal than cyanide and could kill, but they're not aggressive. Like they're not out looking to kill something or biting things just because they can bite them. They're very selective, which is why you've seen so many videos on TikTok of people not knowing about how deadly or venomous these creatures are, and they're playing with them. And most of them have never gotten bitten. It's because they're not a creature that would waste their energy biting something that they couldn't eat unless their life was truly in danger. And I think 4 or 5 people have succumbed to death by blue ring octopus, but it was situations in which there was one fisherman on a boat and he stepped on one and it bit it. There was one where somebody was collecting shells and they put the shells in their pocket. Obviously, it was rubbing around in their pocket and the octopus bit their thigh. So there's all these things where it's like, it was never the octopus's fault. It was always something was going on with a human that made the blue ring bite it. It was never, oh, I'm just going to bite this human. So octopuses, like I said, super smart and oftentimes they want literally nothing to do with us, which is really smart.
So humans, not really worth it for the octopuses to try to eat. What do octopuses eat? Just as a general rule, I mean, these are dynamic creatures. I'm sure they eat many things in the ocean, but can you tell me about what they eat?
Yeah, so again, this depends on what species. There's a species of octopus, like a deep sea species that you see next to whale falls. A whale fall is essentially a whale that has died and it has fallen miles deep down into the ocean. What's really interesting about that phenomenon is that they create ecosystems for a decade because of how much food is on a whale. And so there's been a species of octopus that feeds off of almost like pick the bones clean of the whale fall. So that's that species. But your common octopus, like if you've seen My Octopus Teacher, that was an octopus vulgaris. And those species, they typically prefer crab. They eat fish. And an interesting fact is that you can tell the diet of an octopus by what color their poop is. An interesting thing, I remember going into a classroom and teaching this fact, and I don't know if I traumatized these kids or if I taught them anything, but I got this idea to go into this classroom and teach that an octopus's poop looks like silly string. And so imagine me teaching them this fact, these like third graders or second graders, and saying an octopus's poop looks like silly string. And then I showed them a video of an octopus pooping and shooting silly string out of its siphon. And then I proceeded to spray the class with silly string. And I remember them thinking, because again, they didn't know, they thought I was spraying octopus poop on them because I just taught them that octopus poop looks like silly string. So again, I don't know if I traumatized these kids or if I taught them things that they'll never forget for the rest of their life. But yeah, there's just so many different interesting things. So to answer your question, depending on the species, they eat all sorts of different things.
Yes, you're teaching me things I will not ever forget for the rest of my life. For as long as I live, I am always going to remember the octopus birthing process. Has anyone ever made a horror movie out of octopuses before? Especially the octopus birthing process? Maybe you can show me a video of it. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so I think the octopus has inspired a lot of horror movies. I think when you look at 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, if you look at Ursula, Cthulhu, Alien versus Predator, like all these different things, they kind of look octopus related. If you've looked into them, they're not at all like that at all. They got typecast as this weird, malicious, slimy creature, which is fine for a couple movies, but I think it's about time to give them some other things. And I think that's why I'm really excited about this new documentary coming out, Secrets of the Octopus, because it's going to be the first documentary that showcases multiple species and really positions them as the superheroes of the sea. I think we're going to start seeing in these next couple of years this resurgence of people learning that there are so many different species and starting to want to collect them. I think they're very collectible, and starting to learn about our oceans because, I mean, these octopus are really like the Pokemon of the sea. Like depending on where they live, they have this unique ability. And so if we can make something that actually exists collectible and entertaining, then I think we're really onto something.
Yeah, tell me about this new documentary. When does it come out and what's your role in it? Are you, oh my God, I feel like something really wonderful maybe in your future would be for you to play an octopus character in a Disney movie, like to voice it. I feel like that would be good for you. But that's not here nor there. So tell me about your octopus movie.
The only thing that I'm affiliated with is the marketing team, from the standpoint of I'm the PR agent for the octopus. And so I'm behind the scenes. It's only this year that I've decided to step out and create like this consumer facing brand and really show my face. Right now I'm on a press tour for the book Secrets of the Octopus, and I have an interview on TV on Monday, and then more podcasts that I'm doing, and then potentially Good Morning America or CBS Walk and Talk. All these different things that are coming out pretty soon. I have this platform, and anytime something happens, I just want to share it with the world so that they know that it's happening and get everybody hyped up about how cool this creature is. My expertise is really knowing all the different species of octopuses and being at the helm of when somebody thinks about a weird behavior, they send me the video and they say, have you ever seen this before? So there's a lot of behaviors that I've seen that I don't feel like scientists have seen yet, because they come to me to show me the behavior, and then we'll send it to the scientist that's studying that specific species of octopus. So I feel like I'm the go-to person for new and interesting behaviors. And so I'm really excited about that. I mean, I created my dream job.
You're very deserving of it. I mean, yes, you are lucky to have created your dream job. But, and I'm in your apartment now, and I just sidetrack a little bit. Octopus paintings, octopus mugs, octopus towels, octopus throw pillows, octopus everything. Normally, I get a thank you gift from my guests after they start on my podcast, and of course, was going to get you something octopus themed. But I feel like there would be a real danger of you already having it. This is this place. Oh my gosh. I'll post some pictures. This is like octopus explosion. Oh my God. Is there anything octopus themed you don't have?
I don't have a lot of things. I have some fans. If you go to octopusfanclub.com, we have a Facebook group there. And we have some fans that if you think I'm, you know, obsessed, and we call it obsessed because cephalopod.
Oh my God.
Obsessed. We call the people that are leading the change in this octopus revolution cephalebrities. But go back to your question. There's so many of our fans that have massive collections. I mean, I don't actively collect. This is not something that I do. All these things that you see around my house are gifts from people that wanted me to have something, except these stuffed animals. We sell these on our website, adoptanoctopus.com. Shout out. Yes. Adoptanoctopus.com. We sell them on our website, but all these things are gifts, and all the books that I've gotten are typically from the authors, and on the first page, they dedicate it to Octonation for the work that we're doing. But there are some collectors that have every octopus-related thing or any whatever, so much so where Guinness Book of World Records actually asked me to locate the person with the largest octopus collection to put them in their next book.
You would be the person to ask that. I hope you charge them for your time. All right. So back to our favorite animal. We were talking earlier about what octopuses eat. Tell me about the main predators of the octopus. When you look at cephalopods, did I say that right? Cephalopods? Mm-hmm. Thank God. All right. Does a predator like the taste of an octopus more than the taste of, say, a squid? Is there a level of tastiness? Saying it definitively right now, as delicious as I have found the octopus, I am not ever going to be able to eat one again. Everyone who's listening, you can hold me accountable. It's just not going to happen for me. Maybe one time, maybe I'll give myself. No, I'm not going to do it. Okay, tell me.
So I think when it comes to the octopus, it's almost like when you think of things that are just really easy to eat, like potato chips. In the ocean, the octopus doesn't have any bones, right? So if you think about eating the octopus, it's just like this squishy protein bar, and everything the ocean wants to eat them. You can just go to town on an octopus, no matter what animal you are. So I don't know about their tastiness factor to other animals. I just know that they exist in so many different food webs for so many different animals, eels, birds, so many predators of an octopus. The thing that I'm, I think, most fascinated about right now, I just posted on Threads and on Instagram that I'm interested in between the relationship of birds and octopuses, because I have all these videos of birds coming down to eat an octopus and they're punching them. The octopuses are punching the birds. So yeah, lots of things eat the octopus.
Lots of things. Yeah, a lot of things. Not me. Not going to do it again. Not again. It's to be fair, I've only eaten it three or four times since Mexico City, because I do feel guilty. And now I feel super guilty. I feel like I was eating something that was more intelligent than me. Does releasing a cloud of ink make the octopus more likely to escape a predator? And also, does an octopus release a cloud of ink when it feels scared? I remember when I was in college, I took a personality psychology class, and we learned about personality traits and dispositions in animals, and the octopus had a level of bashfulness you could measure by how much it inked. Tell me about that. Was there any validity to that? Tell me about the whole ink, octopus inking. Something about myself. I feel like sometimes I ink when I get nervous. Not literally. I'm not disgusting, but like, nothing bodily, no bodily function happens. It's just emotionally ink. Tell me about the octopus inking process. I guess that's what I'm asking, Warren.
Imagine if your goosebumps had color-changing cells on them, and every single time you got goosebumps, your body flashed different colors. It's very similar to how the octopuses change colors in their skin. But as far as their ink is concerned, when you see an octopus inking, typically it's their last line of defense. Inking damages the tissues when an octopus does ink, which is weird because you'd think, okay, well, how's that? But actually, I've read that it's not good for them to ink. But the reason they do it is so that they can create almost like a smoke screen. I've heard it done one of two reasons. They do it depending on how much water they mix in with what they're doing. They can either create a smoke screen where it's just this blast of ink that creates a barrier between the vision of the predator and the octopus. And then there's this one where if they mix a lot of mucus and saliva or mucus in with the ink, they can create these pseudomorphs where it almost looks like an octopus or a version of the octopus, and they'll attack that ink blob. And so there's a lot of different reasons that they do it. But as far as why like a predator's not liking the ink, it's supposed to impair their vision. It's supposed to impair their sense of smell so they can't, you know, go after the octopus like an eel. They're like, okay, where is that? I don't have that great of smell anymore. I can't find it. Okay, I'll just swim off and not mess with this octopus. So there's lots of different reasons why they do it. But I heard that most recently that it's actually not good. It damages their tissues. So they don't do it just to do it. They do it because they're severely frightened at that point.
Can you give me a list of what the main predators of the octopus are? And also, how successful are humans at hunting octopus? Honestly, when you go to restaurants and you order octopus, which you don't and I won't ever again in my life, they're priced pretty, I would say, cheaply. It doesn't really seem like there's a shortage of octopus people are eating, and yet they are so, so intelligent. Why aren't they better at evading human capture?
You know, I looked a lot into this because most recently, I would say in the past couple of years, this whole idea of an octopus farm was invented or created because the demand for octopus has gone up as more and more people have developed a palate for the octopus, cooking it all sorts of different ways. And so they were like, we'll create these octopus farms and commercially farm them. But it's really hard because an octopus, they're carnivores and they can eat each other. So if you put a bunch of octopuses together, they're going to consume each other. And so they're like, okay, well, maybe we can modify them to where they don't want to eat each other. And they're trying to come up all these ways to do it sustainably, but it's not been too successful to date. When it comes to consumption, I wouldn't say that I know that much only because it's not something that I tend to focus on because I'm just like, okay, my job in Octonation is actually not to convince people to eat them or to not eat them. It's really to inspire wonder of our oceans. So the reason that I can't talk about that much is because my mind is so on discovering new, unique things that would inspire someone to just consider the ocean more or map wonder to our oceans. I'm not going to be on a street corner with a protest sign. I'm going to be talking about all the wondrous things, about what they do, or have you ever considered this, or they're just now learning this, or did you know that in their venom or in their ink, there's properties that could potentially, you know, cure cancer. Or there's all these different things about this animal that I tend to focus on. So when it comes to consumption, I think it's because I'm not in that lane of advocacy that I have a blind spot.
Yeah, for the record, I think that's a good way of going about things. I remember when I was a freshman in college, took this world literature class, and the professor was sincerely devoted to making everyone become a vegetarian. That was the whole goal of his class. And I remember he played a movie called Earthlings for us. Have you seen Earthlings?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, just skip it. Very intense look at the meat industry. And I remember going vegetarian for 3 days after it. Obviously, not a vegetarian. And I was not a vegetarian for a long time just because it was so focused on fear. Then he showed us, like 6 months later, a movie called Hoof to Heart, which is about horses and the connection horses have with humans. And I remember that movie was significantly more impactful for me to think about my relationship with eating meat and eating animals. And I didn't eat pork for a long time after that. So anyway, I digress back to octopuses and what they eat in their lives. Okay, so octopuses, they get hunted by eels, they get hunted by humans. Birds. What else eats them? fish. Wow. Crab. Sounds like they're desirable items to eat. Yeah. So when they find prey, when octopuses learn about and adjust to prey that they maybe aren't successfully hunting, how novel are their new tactics? Like, let's say two octopuses are working together, because they did read a little bit about how they hunt. If two octopuses can't hunt the same species, like let's say they're trying to eat a crab, they're not successfully hunting it, would they generally adjust in the same way, or is this unique to individual octopuses?
Like I said, octopuses, they learn through observation and they learn through trial and error as well. And so there are, like, I've seen the larger Pacific striped octopus. It's funny, but you'll watch them trying to hunt, say, like a shrimp or something like that. And what they'll do is they'll extend their arm out and almost from behind it to like spook it into its web or spook it into its beak. And so they'll try all these sorts of different ways in order to achieve something. Another cool thing that they do is they'll use their siphon to manipulate their prey at a distance. They'll shoot underwater currents, like a blast, to spook their prey and to almost train their prey to come towards them or to keep them away. It's just really interesting. But like I said, trial and error, observation, eventually they figure it out or they don't, in which case they get eaten and 'tis life.
Survival of the fittest. Nature is cruel.
The natural life of different animals in the wild, and it's very spooky to watch, but it's also a fact of life for those animals. And so, again, just one of those different perspectives that you have where if you're so removed from nature, you don't realize how extremely competitive it is and how it really is a different type of intelligence. And it's just really fascinating. Once you get out of the hustle and bustle of doing whatever you're doing, or I don't know, just considering the fact that you're not the only person that lives and wants a life, and you start contemplating what life is like for others, I feel like it's a very humbling practice to look outside of your normal everyday life and just for a second consider the lives of something else and how that operates. If anything, I feel like it gives you a little bit more gratitude on just how lucky we have it.
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, how lucky I am to not be a tiny little fish getting eaten by a bigger octopus and instead be a tiny little human who can defend herself very, very, this is not a podcast about my life, it's a podcast about octopuses. We talk about living in this world. How successful are octopuses at adapting to their environment and to new environments? And also, I just gotta ask, how will climate change impact the octopus?
There's a lot of interesting people doing studies on climate change and octopus. And the biggest thing that they think it affects, because a cool thing that octopus can do is they can edit their RNA while they're still alive. Climate change is going to affect the food source of what the octopus eats. Octopuses, they have the ability to, like I said, edit their RNA and survive maybe in colder temperatures or warmer temperatures. Not that many animals can do that. Like the things that an octopus eats would just die as a result of that sort of change in environment because they can't adapt. And so it's probably worse off for the things that the octopus consumes. I guess they could just learn to eat each other and kind of like thrive off of each other for a while. But as far as the octopuses, this is another thing that I think why it's interesting to follow them, to research them, and to look into how they've thrived for hundreds of millions of years. Is they will figure it out. That's another reason I just think they're the one of the most iconic creatures, is that they've just shown us through being on the planet for this long that they'll figure it out. They're highly resilient. So as far as climate change and octopuses, I will bet on the octopuses every single day of the week.
Very interesting. Do you think the octopus is going to be the last creature standing? I mean, humans aren't going to be here forever. I think most animals will go extinct. Do you think the octopus, do you think it's going to go extinct?
No. When people ask me this question, I always say us humans have shown that we are the ones that end up destroying our own civilizations. Like, there's more evidence to suggest that humans will destroy each other than there is evidence to suggest that octopuses will go extinct. So they might be the last one standing. I mean, who knows? I don't know. All I know is that when I look to the octopus, I just see a resilient creature that I feel like we have so much to learn from. So yeah, I definitely think they'll be one of the last ones here, depending on what happens. I don't know.
There's so much I want to ask you, so many questions I still have. I feel like when you talk about any kind of animal, it doesn't really seem like the octopus doesn't have a lot of animals that are quite like it. someone wanted to learn more about octopuses, what books or documentaries would you recommend that they explore?
One of my favorite books, and it's not, I don't think it's like a book that you would just go buy, it's kind of like a textbook. It's called Cephalopod Cognition. It was one of the books that really started getting me really fascinated. One of the things that I learned in there was that cuttlefish, they have something called embryonic learning. So they're actually learning information and they're observing their outside world as they're developing in their egg casing. And they actually develop a preference for food prior to hatching as a result of observing its environment outside of its egg casing. And so it's almost like, I don't know, it's a pretty interesting concept of imagine being in, you know, your mother's belly and developing. And maybe it is true that, you know, you can hear music, you're developing intelligence as you're developing. But imagine her belly being see-through, transparent, and that baby being able to open its eyes and observe the world outside of the belly. It's just a really interesting thing to consider. As far as other books, you know, The Soul of an Octopus, you know, some criticism that people have given for that my favorite book is just that it's not scientific enough for them, or maybe it's a little bit too anthropomorphic. Sometimes people view it too woo-woo. Donna Stoff is one of my favorite authors. She just wrote a book called The Lady in the Octopus or the Argonaut. Anyways, it's about the paper nautilus, the one that I mentioned to you that secretes calcite out of her arms. And actually, aquariums were invented as a result of that octopus species by a female, you know, scientist or biologist. And her work was, you know, covered up and stolen. So there's just a lot of interesting things as you follow and look at different species of octopuses and kind of look to the scientists that are associated with that species. Kind of paints a really different picture of the animal to the octopus by National Geographic, because I think it's going to be one of the first documentaries that showcases various species of octopuses. And when I think about the team that's associated with it, a lot of them are members of Octonation, and they're all uniquely lit up by the octopus in a way that I feel like is going to make waves and really showcase the creature in a new light. So that comes out, like I said, Earth Day, so April 21st.
You are literally the most incredible person I have met in a long time. I mean, like we were talking before our podcast, Warren and I were talking about brand and his brand. And I'm going to be honest, sometimes I meet people and their brand is to be very happy and enthusiastic about what they are showcasing to the world. And sometimes I like, you know, I talk to them and after a little bit of talking to them, I'm like, you're a faker. You are not a faker, Warren. You love the octopus. Oh my God, he's just so cute. His eyes get really big when he talks about you're so in love with the octopus. And it sounds like you have been for a long time. Was it ever hard? Were there times in your life where it was hard to be so passionate about something?
Yeah, oftentimes, and this is something I had to learn. Again, going back to the neurodivergence, ADHD, autistic. Sometimes we can talk about the things that we love and without any regard for the person in front of us. And so obviously going through therapy and, you know, making a lot of mistakes with people being like, nobody cares, or you're not in front of the right people. What I learned was the right people will find me as a result of me figuring out how to explain things in a way that finally lights them up. And so I've just found that the right people will find us. But as far as going back to, you know, it being hard, I've done a really good job at locating, like I said, the underwater photographers, the artists, the people who are truly passionate and drawn to this animal. Like, I don't think I'm the person who's the most obsessed or the whatever. There are plenty of people who have their own story with the octopus, and my job is to locate them and to share community with them and passion with them. If other people are attracted to that, then they can come on in. We have a ton of celebrity followers that have come in the fold, like Busta Rhymes, Michael B. Jordan, Andrew Huberman, Amy Schumer, Whitney Cummings, Jordan Sparks. There's just so many different people throughout the years. Ellen DeGeneres shared us on her Instagram. Tom Allison, who's the head of the Facebook app. Ime Archbong, who's an executive at Meta or Facebook. There's so many people that have been drawn to, I think, our passion and just the biodiversity and all the different colors, shapes, history that I think you can come in and figure out where you fit in our world and decide if you want to stay or not. No one's forcing anybody.
What would you say to a 7-year-old child who is really excited and enthusiastic about something, but is getting teased for it? You know, maybe they really like trains or elephants or, I don't know, kids get so obsessed with lots of things. What would you say to that child?
The cool thing about the internet is that it gives you the ability to connect with people where they're at in places that they show up to learn about a certain subject. And so I remember calling my brother and saying, you know, I think what I want to do, I was like, I had read Soul of an Octopus And I was like, I want to start like this octopus fan club because I really think, and I was telling him how I would do it, my strategy and everything. And he goes, are the octopus extinct? He goes, why would anybody care about this animal if it wasn't going extinct? And I remember getting upset and flustered and being like, no, that's why. I tried to tell him and evangelize him and get him to care. And he just, no matter what I would say, just wouldn't care. And I thought, oh, I think that's when it clicked. It's not my job. It's not your responsibility to transform 100% of the lives that you meet. It's your job to figure out who is for you and who is not for you and make that decision quickly and then move on. There's billions of people on this planet. You know, the idea that you're going to click with everybody is an unrealistic thing. So going back to tell 7-year-old Warren, it's just like, you will find your people. You might not have met them yet. Keep talking to other people. Don't go quiet, because I was a very quiet kid and I was very highly sensitive too. Anytime I would be shown the mistreatment of animals or things like that, I would just shut down. My organization focuses on inspiring wonder of the ocean, and you'll never see like a change.org petition on Octonation or anything crazy like that, only because I feel like you can inspire wonder of the ocean while not then backhandedly hitting people with the horrors of the world. It can truly be your job to, and not to be like Pollyanna or to be, you know, overly optimistic or whatever. I just feel like people need a lot of context into why they should care. And you can't tell somebody to care about something if they don't have the underlying context of why it matters, what's at stake, what is their affinity to the ocean now. If you just immediately start saying, like, stop using straws or stop doing whatever, people are like, well, sorry, but I don't care. You have to connect them to something deeper. And so I feel like Octonation solves that problem from the standpoint of, you'll learn one thing and then you'll learn another thing. And then all of a sudden, after looking at 40 or 50 posts, you're like, maybe I do want to consider living a more sustainable lifestyle, or maybe I want to make the conscious effort to change where I throw away something, or maybe I want to do this. I feel like that's how you create sustainability with advocacy for the ocean, not through just telling people, oh, by the way, what you're doing and how you've been living your life is completely wrong. You need to change all of your behaviors. I always tell people anger is not a sustainable emotion. So if you get somebody angry, you make somebody feel bad about what they're doing, it's not sustainable. After a while, they'll just lose it. So with Octonation, like I said, I'm catering more to the person who is curious and wants to make up their own decisions. And I want to arm them, no pun intended, with all these facts, this information, so that they can be tied to something that's more real. And yeah.
Well, I think you're doing a beautiful job of it, Warren. All right, everyone, closing out now. But if you want to stay on after the show, we're going to play a fun little game called Hit Warren Over the Head with Octopus Trivia to see if he really is the world's leading expert on the octopus. Grilling him about the octopus the way I will no longer have an octopus grilled for me. Thanks for coming on my show, Warren.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is fun. Time to play the game. What is the scientific name of an octopus?
The scientific name? Octopoda?
I should have just called it Octopoda this whole time. That's way better than octopuses. All right. How many species of octopus exist?
So I always tell people that there are over 300 known species. But again, you've heard it here first. I feel like there's thousands. They just haven't been scientifically described. Like my favorite, the hairy octopus that I mentioned, that's like a little puffball. We call it the chew octopus on Octonation because it looks like a little chewy. There's just so many that haven't been scientifically described or named. And I think the other week, they just discovered 4 new species of different types of octopuses. So I think that number is going to go up significantly over the next couple of years as different ROVs explore our oceans.
What is the largest octopus species?
So this is an interesting question. So the largest one, the most common, is the giant Pacific octopus. This species can grow, you can see it where it says, oh, it can grow up to 600 pounds. There's no evidence to support that claim other than just some guy saying, I saw a 600 pound octopus. I think they've actually weighed an octopus that's closer to 300 pounds, but I've heard from multiple scientists that they don't really get over like 120 pounds. So that's a big one. Another one that most people don't know about is there's a 7-armed octopus. And that species actually grows to be as big as the giant Pacific octopus from a weight category. So definitely look into that species. It's called the 7-armed octopus because the male, their mating arm is in a pocket behind their eye. So definitely a very interesting species.
What's the percentage of oxygen that's absorbed by the octopus through the skin while it is resting?
I feel like this is on my blog and I don't know the answer. But I'm sure you found this out through OctoNation's blog on how do octopuses breathe. So they can absorb some percentage of oxygen through their skin called cutaneous respiration, like frogs. There's some that can survive both in the water and on land. But yeah, it's called cutaneous respiration. I don't know the actual percentage. Is it like 10 or 15%?
I don't know anything. I'm not the octopus expert. My podcast is not called Paige Researched the Topic Before She Talked to Her Guest.
Cutaneous respiration. I don't know anything except how octopuses can do subcutaneous respiration.
Censoring that word. How does the octopus defend itself?
So there's a lot of different ways an octopus defends itself. So there's something called dematic behavior, which is how an octopus, very similar to like how butterflies, you know, they have false eye spots on their skin that make it appear larger than it really is. This isn't anything like physical. This is just like flashing colors or appearing larger than it is so that things are afraid and won't eat it. There's that type of behavior that an octopus can exhibit. And then there's the inking, that they can scare off predators or escape from predators by inking. There's using a water jet through its siphon to blast predators and spook them. And with birds, you've seen them punch at birds, you've seen them punch at fish. And then there's something called protean behavior, that where they get physical with animals, which is like grabbing hold of them, you know, with their suckers, more of the webbing. There's lots of different ways that they can defend themselves, but they have to do it in a way that's smart. They have to protect their arms. There are certain species of octopuses that can do something called arm dropping. They have brake lines, like biological brake lines, almost like perforated paper. Like, you know how when you were little, you could draw in your journal and then tear it off a perforated side, like just tear the piece of paper down? There's an octopus, like the banded string arm octopus, that has these perforated biological lines in their arm where they can break off their arm and then the predator will attack the arm. Hopefully they'll just be fine with that little snack and not go after the octopus. So there's lots of different ways. And again, so many different species, like the blanket octopus, she has brake lines in her cape, so she can drop pieces of her cape in the open ocean so predators go after her cape. Blanket octopus, another thing that she can do is she can rip off the stinging tentacles of the man-o-war, and she can use them almost like nunchucks to defend herself against predators in the open ocean. So many different defense mechanisms, but you have to go and look at the species and then be like, okay, how are they masters of their environment? How have they really figured it out? It's more for people that are listening to go and discover.
Yeah, I agree. People listening, you got to go and discover. Just map it out for my listeners. What are all the places where you share octopus information that they could go to?
The place that I'm most excited about right now is I co-authored a book called Secrets of the Octopus with my mentor, Cy Montgomery. It's a full circle moment because, again, I created OctoNation because she gave me permission and inspiration to. And so in Secrets of the Octopus, I write 16 different species profiles at the end of the book that you can look at. But I also created Octopedia, which is the largest comprehensive field guide of octopus species online. So if you just look at Octopedia, if you Google it, or if you go to OctoNation and click Octopedia, you can go there. A huge expanse of resources is our Instagram. We have so many different videos of different behaviors of different species of octopuses, art, underwater photography, tattoos. So I guess depending on what you're interested in, you know, you can go to any one of those places. And if you're into merch, we have octomerch.com. We also have adoptanoctopus.com, where you can adopt a squishy bundle of joy for yourself. And yeah, so many different places to find us online. And if you want to join our Facebook group, you can go to octopusfanclub.com.
Thank you so much again for being on my show, Warren.
Thank you so much. I hope you guys have a great day.
It's the cutest way to sign off. He would say that.